What if everything you learn in history class was only half the story? I'm Dr. Harini Bhatt, host of Hidden History. Every Monday, I go where history gets mysterious. Vanished civilizations, doomsday prophecies, paranormal phenomena, and events that science still can't fully explain. On Hidden History, I treat these moments like open case files. Not myths, not superstition, just incomplete explanations waiting for a closer look. Listen to and follow Hidden History, available now wherever you get your podcasts.
It's always amazing to see how quickly your child grows. And I'm not just talking about their height. From those early babbles to full-on storytelling, getting to watch how their ideas, creativity, and confidence develop over the years is honestly pretty incredible. Sometimes they surprise you with what they come up with. And Lego Bricks can be right there with them through all of those stages. It's not just a toy. It's a full creative building journey that keeps evolving as they do. Lego Sets Play starts as early as 1.5 with Lego Duplo, the bigger bricks designed for little hands that are just starting to explore and build. Then around age 4, kids transition to the smaller Lego bricks, and suddenly, you're watching real structures take shape, real ideas form, and their imagination really take off. They begin with simple stacking, but over time they grow into full-on creators, building worlds, stories, and things you never would have expected. That's the kind of magic of Lego Bricks. You're not buying a phase, you're starting a journey. Learn more and start building today with Lego Bricks.
Nerds! Today's episode is sponsored by NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast. Personal finance can feel like a pop quiz you didn't study for. This podcast is your study guide. On NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast, you'll hear from trusted journalists who explain the why behind major financial decisions. You'll get research-backed insights and clear pros and cons, whether you're planning a big purchase or just want to grow your wealth. Make your next financial move with confidence. Follow NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast on your favorite podcast app.
Hey, it's Sparky Pfeiffer here on 1250 AM The Fan, broadcasting live from the Wendy Studios. Make sure to get your Strawberry Frosty today. It's only here for the summertime. Just had myself a Strawberry Frosty last night, along with some chili and cheese and onions, and it was delicious. I'm joined now by Tim Dillard. Follow him on Twitter at Dim Tiller, Valley Sports Brewers analyst in Toronto, Canada, as the Brewers are getting ready to take on the Toronto Blue Jays. Is Toronto among one of your favorite cities that you get to go to throughout the course of your career, Tim?
I've actually never been here before.
Really?
The furthest north I got, I think, was Niagara Falls when my dad was coaching in the New York Penn League. I was probably 8 or 9 or 10. So this is a big deal for me. I get to use my passport. Haven't done that since I went to Venezuela. So pretty cool stuff.
That's very cool stuff. What do you make out of the Brewers? They're in first place in the division with a ton of injuries, can't seemingly get anybody healthy. Offensively, it's been a struggle for this team for most of the year. But I guess, like I started off with, they're still in first place despite everything else.
Yeah. I mean, they're lucky that, you know, for whatever reason, the NL Central has just been on the scuffle scooter this entire season. And no really, you know, qualms about it. They're playing the Blue Jays, who have a similar record, maybe exact record right now. And they're last place in the ALE. Yep. So, yeah, I mean, it's a good thing they're at the NL Central. But at the same time, it's like eventually they're going to get healthy. Eventually there's going to be a little bit of light on the horizon where they know things are about to get, you know, turn and get better. But that's exactly what it is. You know, they're playing good baseball at times, but it's just not enough just because they just can't sustain it. The consistency of every day walking the clubhouse and, man, they lose another guy. So eventually this team will get healthy and show what they can do.
Do you ever have a chance to talk to Council about some of his lineups that he does? Because, again, against a left-handed hitter, we have Christian Yelich in the cleanup. And I looked up to see what his numbers were against left-handed starters this year. 192 average, 283 on base, 234 slugging, and he's batting cleanup. And I tweeted out, I don't understand. I don't understand the lineup.
Yeah, I mean, one day I'll pass the test and I can be a major league manager, and that way I can put out whatever lineup I want to put out. You know, he's done that. He took the test. He's passed it all. He's been there and done that.
Yep.
So, you know, I don't think he's just throwing darts at a board. I think there's some strategy, and I think at the same time they haven't come up with a viable lineup that's just been extremely dangerous against left-handed starters. And so with that comes experimentation. You want to sit there and go, well, what's going to work? How are we going to find this out? And You know, a lot of managers would say, no, there's one way and we're going to live or die by this one way. And luckily, Craig Counsell's a guy that's like, I'm going to test the waters. I'm going to figure out what works. And it just means that he's in tune with what's going on. Maybe we don't always see it. Maybe we can't make sense of it. But at the same time, that's, you know, that's his job, not ours, to try to make it work.
I have heard stories. I don't remember if it was Garner or Treblehorn, one of those guys back in the day, literally when teams would be scuffling, whatever else, literally would put names in a hat and just pick them out of a hat to determine what the batting order was going to be, trying anything possible to try and get this team out of a funk. Have you ever been a part of anything of like that in the minors or the major leagues where the manager decided to put together a lineup that way to try and break a team out of something?
If there was, I wasn't a part of it. I will say that there's times when you're slumping offensively. I've seen guys play different games where, you know, they'll use one bat for the entire game. Like, you know, everyone agrees that we're going to use such and such as bat. And you don't even need a bat boy that day. It's you walk out there and the guy hits and the next dude walks up and he uses that bat.
Oh, wow.
And it kind of takes a more simple approach. Like you're forced to do it. It's like if you're a pitcher and you're on the mound and the manager comes out to the mound, not to take you out, but just tells you, and I've had this, you know, says, hey, I want you to throw every pitch right here, a slider to this hitter. And you say, okay. And it kind of gives you some sense of like, okay, well, you know, a little deep breath, like, you know, hey, if I hang a slider and the guy hits it, it's on the manager, you know, right? Like I've bought into this teamwork type thing and I'm going to try to execute my pitch, but I have to do it with a little bit more freedom now. So that's the same way with you start doing play these games with involved and they're all part of the team and they kind of alleviate some pressure. Like, yeah, using the same bat. I've also heard of take four. First time through the lineup, everybody walks up there and they take the first four pitches of the at bat. If you take three down the middle, then you just walk back and it's everyone buying into it. You know, if you're the 7, 8, 9 hole and you watch everyone else take four pitches, what are you going to do? You're going to go up there and take four pitches. So you'd be surprised at the results of some of this stuff. There's a reason people don't do this kind of stuff all the time. But every once in a while, it's okay to shake things up.
How quickly can you pick up on a game plan from another team when you're pitching? Because a lot of times we'll see guys against the pitcher and they're attacking early in counts. Other times, like you said, they're kind of sitting back and letting this guy throw a lot of pitches and not swinging at first pitches, regardless of where it is. But as a pitcher who's facing this, how long does it take you and the catcher maybe to pick up on kind of a pattern if there is one?
Well, sometimes you're so in the weeds, like you kind of miss whatever it is, the trees or the forest or whatever the analogy is, because you're so worried about so many other things. That's where the coaches come in. Like that's their job, is to see the big picture. For instance, for the Hauser game against the Blue Jays, they were really trying to attack him early. I believe of like maybe the 10 hits or 9 hits that he gave up, 7 of those were on 3 pitches or less. That tells me, if I'm the pitcher, like, man, they are swinging super early. So now I still want them to swing, but I want them to swing at a little bit better pitch that's for me, like out of the zone or just on the edge, something like that. And there's no reason to miss big. You just want to miss the middle, honestly. But a lot of times when you're so attention to detail and you're trying to get on the same page as your catcher and you're trying to make, you know, find your curveball grip or whatever it may be, sometimes you don't see the big picture. That's where a coach, a catcher, somebody has to come in and say, listen, they are attacking you early. They're swinging early. They don't care where it is. You need to make a better first, you know, 2 pitches, 3 pitches.
Talking with Tim Dillard. Follow him on Twitter at Dim Tillard. Always entertaining, obviously. Analyst for the Milwaukee Brewers on Bally Sports Wisconsin. Tim, when you are in a situation kind of like this Brewers team is, and you're kind of rotating through guys on the roster, Luke Voit now being designated for assignment. And there seems to be a lot of this going on across baseball. Jesus Aguilar, the former Brewers first baseman, was just designated as well. How much are you paying attention to guys that are being released around the league as much as to guys being released on your own team?
I mean, as a broadcaster, you try to keep up with it.
But when you're in the actual dugout itself, are you really paying attention?
When you're in the dugout, it happens, right? Like you lose guys to injuries, lose guys to sit down. It's kind of part of the game and you have to keep going, right? They lost Willy Adames. You know, it was an unfortunate accident and it is a part of baseball and it hurts. It hurts physically. It hurts emotionally. It hurts the team. And you know that he's going to be back. You know the team's going to come around and he rally around him. That's already happened. So I think when you're in the mix of it, you just you hurt for the guy. You know, when something when one of your buddies is gone and he's on another team, and you know maybe down the road you get to see him because you lose a best friend that you've done life together for months on end or years on end. But at the same time, you do have a job to do, and you have to be, you know, that kind of goldfish where you kind of go, you know what? And that's the metaphor for all of it, right? You have, everyone has something going on in life, even if you're a baseball player or not. And by the time you get to the field and by the time you step on that field, you have to push everything that you're going through to the side because you have to go out there and execute your job. And a lot of times that's a really difficult thing to do just because you are a human being and you do have feelings and emotions.
That Willie Adames situation where he's kind of up in the dugout hanging over that rail. Do you think baseball eventually ends up putting up netting there in front of the dugouts as well to protect players?
I don't know. I don't think so. I mean, I don't know if players would want, like if you did a vote across the board, I don't think guys would, you know, vote for, netting or plastic cages or anything like that. I don't think they would. I think they'd be overwhelmingly like, no, it's fine. It is a rare thing and it could happen. And I think everyone would just argue to play the odds. That would be my hunch. I don't know. Maybe it'd be 100% yes. Bring us, you know, we'll just all hide in the clubhouse and then, you know, come out when it's our turn to play. I don't know. But you look at like the Fenway, the dugouts are so far away. There's so much foul territory, right?
Yep.
So if you give up a foul ball as a pitcher, there's a lot of room there for a guy to make an out. So to kind of give that more intimate setting, when they started building stadiums, they started moving the fans closer. Well, what happens when you move the fans closer to the game? Well, there's more risk for injury. So there goes the nets. But at the same time, the dugouts are right there. So this wasn't an issue, you know, 50, 70 years ago, 100 years ago, or even certain stadiums now. But when you're so close to the field like that, it is part of it. Don't know the exact remedy of it, except use it as a caution. I used that video. I didn't really want to watch it myself, but I showed it to my 14-year-old son as a, you know what, hey, this can happen. If baseball, if that's the path that you choose, you have to be paranoid in this game. It's even the same. When I'm on the field now, even though they're taking batting practice and they have a net, like I cannot turn my back to the field. I cannot. I always have one eye, and I think people think I'm rude when I'm talking to them because I'm hearing what you're saying, but I'm staring at this field watching batting practice or these, you know, infield, outfield, because you always have to have an eye on the field. And anyway, baseball, just for whatever reason, it finds anything that goes wrong. And, you know, sometimes it happens to you. It's happened to me, and it's unfortunate.
Well, that's the thing. I mean, you're talking about having a kid who sees that guy get hurt. And obviously that could be you one day getting drilled by a baseball, but you could also be the guy that hit the baseball. And that mental hurdle has to be pretty sizable well. Brian Anderson had tears in his eyes as he was trying to complete that at bat.
Yeah, I don't think anyone's going to get that out of their mind anytime soon. It's just real. I mean, it is. I was in a game in AAA playing the Cubs in Iowa. We were in Des Moines. Iowa. And anyway, somebody hit this, I mean, an absolute scud into the stands. And the way their concourse is, they have like a couple of them, I guess, but it was like the middle section. It's about a 9 foot above the concourse. And it hit this elderly man that was sitting there. And I think he was standing, I think he's already stood up. He was doing something. He got hit. And I mean, he didn't get hit in a great spot. And he kind of was staggering. And I mean, the whole game stopped. Everyone's like, oh my goodness. This guy ended up falling over the railing and fell. And then, no, he fell back in the seat. It was his wife that got up and she saw this and she was freaking out and she fainted and fell over onto the concourse. Anyway, goodness. I mean, you couldn't not stare at it, but at the same time, you were just like, this is terrible, right? Like baseball just takes an immediate backseat because you just saw something and you have to deal with it as a human being. And I don't know why you're seeing guys get batter violations because, you know, a guy hits a scud way down the line over the net into the bleachers and they're sitting there looking to make sure it didn't hit anybody. And then they're called for like a timer violation not to get in the box. It's like there's a certain level of humanity I think that we all have to acknowledge when this stuff happens. Like, let's just take a second and regather ourselves because it is difficult.
Were you ever a fan of watching wrestling, like WWE wrestling or anything back in the day?
Yeah, I've been to a couple of matches. I saw Sting fight Nature Boy.
Okay, so you know wrestling.
What year that was?
Right. Yeah, okay. Yeah. So do you remember then? Because this goes right along with it, and all, for the humanity, and there wasn't on this night when Owen Hart in a pay per view was supposed to come down from the ceiling and the harness broke or whatever, and he essentially fell to the ring and essentially was pretty much dead. And they took him out, and Vince McMahon decided, we're still doing the pay-per-view. Everybody wrestles. And people were coming from out back just crying as they were walking to the ring as Vince was making them all wrestle for the remainder of that night. I'll never forget that as long as I live, because I was watching the pay-per-view. And, you know, the whole ring was filled with all these people working on Owen Hart and everything else, and watching all these people have to come out and wrestle. And again, all for the name of money at the end of the day to make sure you could get his pay-per-view dollars. That was horrible. And if something were like that to happen to baseball, there's just no way you would continue that baseball game. You could just look at the Buffalo Bills, the thing that happened with DeMar Hamlin and what happened there. And they walked off and said, we're not playing. It's over. And he didn't die or anything, but it was a scary situation. And in baseball, I feel like I can't remember a situation where they stopped a baseball game after something like that happened.
Yeah, I mean, I guess comes to mind is the earthquake. It was at 89, 90.
I was watching that on TV. A's. Yep.
Yeah, like, you know, there's stuff like that. And, you know, you're looking at your people in the stands. I remember we were taking batting practice in AAA in Memphis. And a bunch of the players' wives and kids and stuff were running. I don't think my family was there, but they're running like in the park during batting practice. So we're in the outfield shagging. We can see people and we're like, is that such and such his wife? Like, what's going on? Turns out the team hotel had caught fire that we were staying at. So, like, you know, we kind of canceled BP. We went over. We found out that all the electricity was off. Some of the floors had smoke damage. Oh, we had to walk up the stairs. And we're, like, on level, you know, 9 or 11 or whatever. So we had to walk up the stairs because the elevator didn't work. Grab all your stuff. We end up taking it to the field, end up getting checked into another hotel. But, like, sometimes stuff just happens. You don't really know. And it's so rare. It's like, what's the remedy? Do you just cancel the game? What does that look like? There's no precaution or whatever it is set in place as
no
a backup
precedent
to when something happens. No, yeah, there's, and so no one knows what to do and what's the right call, you know, and how much time is needed. And, you know, it's a feel thing. It's relative. People are going to think, well, it's the whole thing should be canceled. Other people are like, no, I paid, you know, $500 to be here. So I want to watch this thing play out. You know, so who knows? Who knows what the right answer is? These are the moments where I'm, thank God I'm not in charge. Because nobody would want me in charge. I don't know what to do. But somebody is in charge, and they have to make the call. And if they make the call, whatever they feel, they're going to get blasted from, you know, a people that said they shouldn't have made that call. So it's just a tough situation sometimes being in charge. That's why I don't mind, you know, kind of being an ant. You know, right? I just I do what I'm told, and I do it the best I can.
No doubt. Brewers Unfiltered podcast also going on this week. Tim Dillard, Adam McKelvey, Sophia Minter. Make sure to download that on your Odyssey app or head on over to brewers.com. One last thing for you. You and I have talked about this to death, and you brought it up earlier about time of game and how this whole thing has changed Major League Baseball, good, bad, or indifferent. And for the first time on social media, I saw a lot of people tweeting at me complaining about, I think it was the afternoon game during the week last week that was 2 hours and 9 minutes long, complaining that it was too fast. The games are going too fast. They need to slow this thing down again. We don't want 4 hours necessarily, but that was just way too fast. That was the first time I've really seen people complain about it being too fast. I was floored. I thought it was great. But a lot of fans not happy with the game going as fast as it has been lately.
Well, again, you know, who wants what? And, you know, if you look at the average time of a football game, if you like NFL games, if you like how NFL games work, that's 3 hours.
Yep.
And that's what it is across the board. It's 3 hours. That is the time that's the chunk that this game is going to be. And people are okay with that. People like football games, but it's once a week. So how does that prepare, you know, compared to baseball? Who knows? I was actually on a broadcast call today. I hope we're allowed to share this stuff. Have no idea if I am or not. But they just came out the final numbers for the first, third of the season, quarter of the season, however it is, a third, I think. And the official time is 2 hours, 39 minutes is what the average game is for the first third of the season. And they're actually upset with that, MLB. They want it to be more like 2.5 so it can compete more with the NBA look at things.
NBA normally because is like 220, I think, or 223, something like that.
Yeah. Yep. Well, they had it on there. I screenshot. I didn't look at the NBA as close. So anyway, I'm looking at this going, okay, well, what does this look like? You know, like this is going to make some people upset if that's the average time, because you will get maybe a occasional 3-hour game, more like 2:45, but every once in a while you get a 2-hour, 9-minute game.
Yep.
And if you're paying the money and you're doing the tailgating and you're putting in the time and effort, if you fly somewhere, we're in Toronto right now, a lot of Brewers fans, you know, it's a lot of prep. It's a lot of work to get out there and have a game that feels like it's over really quick. So you're going to have that demographic that's like, this is way too short. I don't know. I don't know what's right. It's just really strange nowadays when it's like we made a rule and then there's another rule to comp the rule. And then there's another rule to explain the rule. And you just kind of go, all right, when's it end?
Somebody brought up to me that the owners at some point are going to get mad because they're robbing themselves of concession stand money the quicker these games go.
Yeah, they did a study. I heard there was MLB, Baseball America article that I was looking at, and it said the concessions wasn't that big a deal. You know, concessions across the board were fine. It was the beer sales that suffered a little bit. I've talked to several clubs. The beer sales were dropped dramatically to the point where the Nashville Sounds actually started serving beer through 9 innings. Of course, their games are really short comparatively, I think, even to MLB. But anyway, they had to start selling beer through the 9th inning because they had to get some sort of money back because people weren't buying enough because the game was just all of a sudden it's over. I know the Brewers tried that for a week or a homestand, and I guess it was the, you know, paying the people to be there as opposed to how much they were selling. It didn't seem like it was a quantifiable thing. So they went back to the end of the 7th. So I don't know. To me, that was the first thing I saw. I thought about, like, man, shorter games just means less of everything.
Yeah.
less sales. And I was like, if the whole thing's about money, I don't understand, you know, why they want to make it shorter. And then sometimes in some cases charge you more for it. So I don't know the remedy of all that kind of stuff, but I feel like at every turn, it's just like another rule that kind of will irk, you know, a good section of people. So I don't know. I don't know what's right or wrong, but I'm just glad I'm not in charge at times.
Not in charge of that either. No, you are not. It's Tim Dillard. Follow him on Twitter at Dim Tillard. And again, he's brought to you by our fine folks over at Fourth Base Restaurant. They do a great job over there. Yeah, I know. It's the iconic bar restaurant from the movie Major League. And I don't think people expect the quality and type of food you get when you go in there. Because when you go in there, you think, it's just a sports bar. Just grab me a burger or whatever. And yes, you could have a great burger and stuff, but they got steaks and lobster. They got all kinds of stuff over there, too.
Yeah, it's almost like a detriment calling it a sports bar. There are sports, there is a bar, but at the same time, the food is incredible. And the menu's on a little board, and you walk over there, and you're probably wondering, where is the menu? And they point to it, and then you get your food, and you're thinking, oh my goodness, this place is amazing. A hole in the wall that was there forever, and no one knew about it. So yes, definitely check it out.
Tim, thank you so much for coming on, man. We'll talk again next week.
All right, thanks, Sparky.
For years, Gone South has been a podcast about crime in the American South. But for our new season, we're widening the lens. Through deeply reported, narrative-driven stories, we're digging into the myths, scandals, and power structures that still shape the South, and in a lot of ways, the country itself. Follow and listen to Gone South Season 5, an Odyssey podcast, available now on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your shows.
It's always amazing to see how quickly your child grows. And I'm not just talking about their height. From those early babbles to full-on storytelling, getting to watch how their ideas, creativity, and confidence develop over the years is honestly pretty incredible. Sometimes they surprise you with what they come up with. And Lego Bricks can be right there with them through all of those stages. It's not just a toy. It's a full creative building journey that keeps evolving as they do. Lego Sets Play starts as early as 1.5 with Lego Duplo, the bigger bricks designed for little hands that are just starting to explore and build. Then around age 4, kids transition to the smaller Lego bricks, and suddenly you're watching real structures take shape, real ideas form, and their imagination really take off. They begin with simple stacking, but over time they grow into full-on creators, building worlds, stories, and things you never would have expected. That's the kind of magic of Lego bricks. You're not buying a phase, you're starting a journey. Learn more and start building today with Lego bricks.
Nerds.
Today's episode is sponsored by NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast. Ever Google a money question and end up 12 tabs deep with 12 different answers? This podcast is your shortcut back to clarity. NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast breaks down financial decisions with a team of trusted journalists. They explain the why behind decisions like investing, home buying, and choosing credit cards with clear, research-backed insights. No jargon, no misinformation. Make your next financial move with confidence. Follow NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast on your favorite podcast app.
Every week on the Moth Podcast, real people tell their stories live on stage.
I burst into tears. And I wasn't sure if I was crying because I hadn't been kissed in a really long time or if I had just never been kissed like that before.
To hear fascinating, heartbreaking, and sometimes hilarious stories from astronauts, teachers, farmers, and people just like you, follow and listen to The Moth wherever you get your podcasts.